Hello and welcome to Kevin Steve's Indie Publishing Adventure. I'm Kev.
And I'm Steve.
You look really confused for a minute there.
I forgot I did that on this show.
Brilliant. We've also got a guest with us this week, so I'm glad you forgot how to do the intro. We've got Jim Hinks from Comma Press, who's come to join us. Hello, Jim.
Jim.
All right, how's it going?
Yeah, I'm very good. How are you?
Yeah, not bad. Excited to be here.
I see. He's excited. I like that. I think we're more excited. I've put a tie on. I've never podcasted in a tie before. This is all for you, Jim.
I'm naked.
I noticed that the thing we're going to be talking about in a minute included poetry. And I thought, you know what? We've never talked about poetry before. But if poetry is getting involved, I should wear a tie. I should look like I'm trying to look the part.
Can you get away with writing poetry?
No.
No.
I don't think I would.
So much money in poetry?
No.
Jim, again.
Jim. Is there much money in poetry?
I would say there's loads, yeah. I often see poets Rolls Royces and wearing Rolexes. And
I feel like he's winding us up.
Sadly, not much, no. I don't think many poets are just poets. They tend to teach and do.
Plus, if you're a proper poet, you don't care if there's money in it, do you? You're in
and
it.
You're probably going to rap music. If you're that good at it. Eminem is probably the world's foremost poet.
Interesting. Jim, the reason you're here, not just to hear our thoughts on Eminem, you've got a shiny new thing that we've both had a look for, haven't we, called MacGuffin. Tell us all about MacGuffin, because it looks shiny and new and exciting and something that we might be interested in.
Well, it's a self-publishing platform that we've just launched, and it hosts fiction and poetry in text and audio form. So if you're a writer, you upload your story or poem along with an audio recording, and it doesn't have to be professionally recorded in the studio. We really want to encourage writers to sort of follow the lead of amateur podcasters who've shown that technological barriers to entry have fallen away, and you can get a really decent recording just with a laptop and some free software, or even a smartphone. So if you have an iPhone, for example, it's got Voice Recorder Studio and Voice Memo on it. And if you can find a quiet room, you can get a really, really good audio recording. So when people use MacGuffin as a reader, they can either read the text or toggle to the audio. It's really good for commuters in that respect. I've always really, really loved audiobooks from a young age. Back in the days of Walkmans, I had an Iowa and personal cassette player, I always used to have audiobooks as well as music.
Couldn't have left the house for very long if you were on a Walkman. You'd have your trolley with all the extra tapes in there with you while you're out and about.
Unspooling in my pocket and getting back on them, and then having to re-spool them with a pencil.
I remember when I was younger, the one audiobook I got on cassette was The Lion, the Witch and the Wardrobe, and it came in a big plastic folder because it had so many cassettes in, and it was awesome.
I kind of remember being a grumpy old man as like a 4 or 5 year old wandering around the house and then garden trying to play my Thomas the Tank Engine audio tapes, and I tried to do it in the house. Someone was watching telly. I tried going upstairs and it was too noisy. I went in the garden and my neighbours were having a party. I remember just sulking in the front garden because I couldn't find anywhere quiet. But yeah, I forgot about all that. The audiobooks on tape used to be quite a big thing, didn't they?
They did. And now they're all awesome. We can put some of our stuff out in audio, yeah.
I think it's coming back, and it will definitely become more popular. And part of the reason publishers think this way is a lot of the stuff that's happened with ebooks over recent years has been device-led. So obviously Amazon brought out Kindle, the reader, the device, and suddenly ebooks took off. And then Amazon obviously wanted to sell more and more Kindles, so they bring out new versions with more and more functionality. So suddenly you can, you know, watch movies or kind of, you know, check your email or whatever, go on Facebook. And as they added more functionality, then ebook sales started to level out, and they're now starting to drop in comparison to sort of dead tree sales. So I think publishers are looking to the future and looking at things like wearables and thinking, well, one thing that people are always going to want to consume is audiobooks, because they can't really foresee a time when we're not going to want to look at the world, even in driverless cars. So they kind of see it as something to invest in. And I think that's a reasonable enough assumption to make that audiobooks are going to grow.
So is this going on the like the Wattpad style model where we're putting out? Is there any way for us to make a few quid out of it? That's what we're.
We sound obsessed.
I know.
But, I mean, like, yeah.
No, it's a fair enough question. We actually built it as a place to sort of host sample content, and so it's not paid for at the moment. So it's the kind of place where you might put a poem or a story and then link to where it is on Amazon or your publisher website or whatever, and hopefully find new readers and generate sales for that. I would love to in future build in some kind of unlock content thing. So you read the first chapter of a novel and then if you like it, you pay to unlock the rest of it. But that's kind of beyond the scope of what we're doing at the moment. When we came up with the idea, you know, we were thinking, well, so for all our books that are published on available on Amazon, you obviously get the first chapter as a free preview as a reader. So this stuff is out there and available. Yeah. You know. And a lot of these writers are putting these single stories or poems on their own websites. So it's not, the idea is not to kind of like exploit writers by getting content that's not already available elsewhere. And we don't ask for exclusivity or anything like that. It should be hopefully quite a straightforward and simple thing for a writer to do, to just go, okay, it's already out there. I'll put it on this as well and hopefully find some more.
Yeah, I really like the idea of it being like a lead generation type thing, because it's the sort of thing where you could put it out to your mailing list. Here you go. Here's the first chapter of my new book. You can listen to it or you can read it. I really like the idea of doing that. And the crucial thing that I think I picked up on you saying there, which makes it a little bit different for Wattpad, and it was my big frustration with Wattpad, is it wouldn't let me put clickable links in it to get me through to Amazon to then actually get people to buy my book. You said you were able to link out to where you can buy it from.
Yes. On the upload page, you know, it's pretty easy. We've done a lot of user experience work on it to try and make it as smooth as possible, and I think it compares really well. Considering we're like a tiny organization, I think it's so much better than like Amazon KDP when it launched, and Kobo and Wattpad in terms of usability. It's pretty straightforward, and there's just like a field where you can paste a link in that appears at the end of your story.
That's exactly what I want. I want to be able to give people a sample chapter, stick it on Twitter, stick it out on the mailing list, and have people be able to sample that first chapter, be able to listen to it or read it, and then go and buy the book afterwards. That's the whole point of getting the sample out there. When you're on some, even doing it directly from the website, it can be a little bit clunky getting audio on there and then linking it back to where we want people to be. So it sounds like a really clever system.
Go on, Jim.
Do you have stuff on Wattpad?
I've had stuff on Wattpad. I've been writing, I've been plugging away a novel all year that every now and again I think, oh, it's nearly done, and then, oh, actually, no, I'm rewriting it. It's currently at one of those stages where I've pulled it off of Wattpad because I'm completely rewriting the first quarter of the book because the last bit has changed so much. But it was on there, and I was trying to use it as a way to feed people onto the mailing list for that book because it was completely different to anything we've written before, and it's sort of the first dipping the toe into young adult fiction. And that's kind of why I use Wattpad, because I've got a teenage daughter and she likes young adult fiction and uses Wattpad a lot. So it seemed like a good place to put it to try and generate some interest. But it was actually really hard to get any kind of momentum going on there, because I think the feeling of the user base over there seems to be, they kind of frown on you a little bit if you're using it as a sample. Because there's so much on there that is complete stories for free. If you go on there with, here's the first couple of chapters of my new book, if you like it, join my mailing list, or you can pre-order the book here. It got a little bit of kickback from they didn't seem to like it, some of the users. And it sounds like if you've got a platform that you're building around, well, that's what this is for. This is for samples. That seems to fit in more with what I was trying to use Wattpad for.
I was going to ask, how does it work from the reader's point of view? Because what I'm thinking is, if we're able to just put our samples on there for people to look at and share the link, and readers are able to just go on and read them, kind of from your point of view, for example, is there adverts that pay you, or how does it work? Can you promote your things?
We built a project with, we're really lucky, we got a grant to build, so we don't have to generate revenue.
Okay, that makes sense.
Just to, it's for funding called the Digital R&D Fund for the Arts. Common Press is a non-profit constituted just to support and promote the short story and publish it new writers. So it's a nice situation to be in, and very unusual that we just got this grant and they said, yeah, we like the idea, we like what you do. And so it takes the pressure off us in terms of having to monetize it. I guess we might do in future because
you can't run forever on its own, but that sounds great.
In terms of me not having enough time to respond to all the email queries and stuff like this, it's the kind of job and this tech support that goes along with it. And the bigger it gets, more people sign up, the more work there is to do in that respect. But we don't have to have advertising or anything. And, we're not looking to sell it. We're not looking to monetize it.
Now that means it's more free to help people promote, I guess. There's no kind of, they spent £50, we have to promote them over everybody else. If it's completely equal, then that's going to make the cream of the crop kind of rise, isn't it? You can battle it out and be good,
I think as well, it sort of gets you a lot of goodwill in the short story and poetry world when people kind of understand that you're not basically trying to make a fast buck out of them, but committed to the promotion of literature. I've worked at Commonwealth Press, which is a short story publisher, for 10 years, and it's not easy to sell short fiction and poetry. It really isn't. They're kind of difficult forms to sell, as you probably know, but there's a really dedicated readership for them. So people who love short stories, they really love short stories, and they will kind of buy pretty much every single book you publish just because they're into the press and the writers that you publish and that kind of thing. So there's a lot of good work. I think it's a big difference from someone like us doing it to if you're just a kind of tech startup somewhere with loads of venture capital and
kind of claw it back
and revenue really quick. Going back to Wattpad and putting samples on there, there's one thing that might be of interest about MacGuffin that's a little bit controversial, which is from the start, we wanted to build it with open analytics. So if anyone can see where in the world stories are being read, anonymized. So you can look on the analytics of any story and bring up a map, and it will put pins in the map showing fuzzified location within 25 kilometers squared. So you can see people are reading your stories in the States or Europe or whatever. But it's also got data on read and listen ratios and completion rates, and most controversially of all, dropout points. So where
readers... that's fantastic. I was just thinking,
this has a perfect platform for research, doesn't it?
Amazing.
Really cool.
But it's quite galling if you're a writer, because anyone can see that. So it's you've got to sort of put yourself out there. But it's been really interesting, because what we've learned is we put a load of public domain classics on there, so Chekhov and James Joyce short stories and stuff like that. So you can compare the dropout rates. And almost universally, what you get is readers read the first paragraph or so, and then you've got almost 50% dropout on almost even, the greats of the form. And I think it's really similar to, readers going into a bookshop and picking up a book and just pages and putting it down. So that was a horrible shock at first. And then we realized this is actually telling us just about general reader behavior rather than these specific stories. So it's only when you really start comparing stories to classics that you start to use for data. And dropout rates not at the start, but somewhere in the middle where you've got a really dodgy chapter and some of them, and there's you basically got a horizontal line on your graph that starts at 100% because you've got 100% of people reading or listening. And then as they drop out, the line goes down, so it maybe goes down to 50. And occasionally you'll see a really jagged line in the middle of the story where there's a really bad scene or something like that. So we're hoping it's all, because you can go back, re-edit your story and republish it, and then filter the analytics to compare dropout rates.
Yeah, exactly.
another.
I mean, you say it's controversial. I guess I can understand from an author point of view why it might be a bit scary to have that out there. But for I think for people at the stage we're at with our writing careers, I mean, we've signed up for the course that Harry DeWolf was talking to us about last week. So we're in the process of writing some short-ish stories. One of the questions I was going to ask you later is how long is a short story? But we'll get to that. But we're looking at something like 25,000-30,000 words, which I guess is getting to the upper end of a sample. It's like a third of a novel. But I would really like to be able to, right, here's my first go at it. I've had a little bash at editing it and polishing it up myself, but I don't really know what I'm doing. Stick it on MacGuffin. Right, they're stopping reading there. Let's go fix that bit. Go back on and, yeah, use it as a way to, if there's enough traffic coming through, and that's the crucial thing, if there's enough traffic coming through, then that could be a fantastic way to take a pretty rubbish first go at it and turn it into something that people are reading all the way through to the end. And then once you've got something that is keeping people hooked in, all you need to do is slap a decent cover and product description on it, stick it on Amazon, and Bob's your uncle.
You're right about the traffic, because the analytics, I think when you've got a small sample size of 10 reads, it doesn't tell you enough. As soon as you get over 100 reads, then you really start to see sort of reliable data, I think.
So how does visibility and searchability work on MacGuffin? How can we make sure we're getting our chunk of the traffic?
Well, this is something that we've done a bit of work on since we had a little beta trial for about 6 weeks prior to launch, where we just invited a bunch of writers to try it and tell us what they think. And what we realised is that new stuff isn't visible enough, and we needed to kind of gamify it a bit more, if you like, to motivate writers to kind of share out and also find ways of making new stuff visible. So now go on there. But MacGuffin uses tags for searching, so any end user can add tags to anyone else's work. So you might read a story and tag it feminist, dystopian, Manchester, if it's set there, or something, you know, epiphany, whatever, some or stuff to do with content, you know, cars, violence, whatever the hell it's about, zombies.
If any book's got all of those tags on, I want to read it, by the way, because that sounds amazing.
So whenever anyone searches for any of those tags, it will be returned in the results. So that gives readers themselves a certain amount of curatorial content. But it also means you can do really refined searches as a reader. So if you've got a commute that's 15 minutes long, you can search 15-minute listen in crime to find a short story that's going to meet your criteria. So there's that kind of... It's very easy to stumble upon new stuff, but what we found was that it didn't really gamify it sufficiently for writers to be motivated to go out there and thrash it, in sharing on their social networks and bringing other readers in. So we introduced a couple of tabs on the homepage. So after you've used MacGuffin a couple of times, you can see trending stories. So those are the ones that are most read within a 14-day period. Highest rated, most completed, which is a pretty useful one. Editors picked and recently published. So that means that everyone really has got a chance of being discovered. Recently published, it doesn't matter if it's terrible, it's still, if it's the last thing published, it's still going to be at the top of the list. But it does reward you for being the most read or the highest rated. Let's say you've got a brilliant story on there, but you just don't have many friends, let's say. or people who you kind of invited to it, or people haven't stumbled across it because it's not tagged very well, is still a way of kind of being visible. So we're trying to look at it from all angles. In terms of readership, I think I keep coming back to this idea. I don't know if you remember this story of the stone soup, where it's like a European folktale, where there's a famine and the guy turns up at the village and says, you know, let me a cooking pot and I'll make you this stone soup. And you don't need anything else, I've just got this magic stone. So he gets some water and puts it in the pot. And he says, oh, it'd be a bit better with some salt and pepper. if you give me some salt and pepper. So the villagers do that. And then, you know what? Some carrots would really add the, just make it perfect. And so it goes, and eventually the villagers give him all the ingredients to make a soup, and then he takes a stone out at the end. And that's kind of what needs to happen with these kind of platforms. Every single kind of readership. So the poets, the short story writers, the YA writers, and, the kind of novelists with the first chapter and the spoken word poetry slam people. They all of it bring a different audience, but it should hopefully cross-pollinate to a certain extent. Mm. That's basically what we're trying to do.
Excellent.
Sounds really good. I mean, I think, you've definitely sold it well in my mind for the analytics and all that. Sounds fantastic. How long has it been going now? Is it a couple of weeks, did you say? Or
a week since...
Since official launch, was that?
Yeah.
How can we use it at the moment? Is it a website? Is there an app?
There's an Android app in beta, which doesn't have full functionality, but it kind of gives you a sense of it. And both apps are going to be out at the end of the month.
Cool.
So, end of July. So the website is pretty much the kind of finished article. Pretty pleased with it. And it's not mobile optimized. So if you're on a mobile, I would wait until the apps come out.
I shall be on it when the...
Have we told people the web address?
I have not. Have you?
I have not. So it's mcguffin.io. Is that right? So mcguffin's mcguffin.
We're a writing podcast. If people can't spell MacGuffin,
then... Well, I typed it in another way because I think it's MC, the MacGuffin that I was used to, and it came up, and I found it under MacGuffin.
Brilliant.
So, people might do the same as me.
Right. Getting back to my question before, you said you're an editor, a short story editor. Now, firstly, how long is a short story?
Oh, God. I don't know. I'll tell you how we generally, it's in terms of our own submissions, anything between 1,500 words and about 8,000, I would say. But people argue about this all the time. I think it's more to do with approach than word count, almost. That kind of singularity of the purpose of the short story, where it's always heading towards its trajectory and it doesn't really digress from it. It's just to the point.
Mm.
I think that's more characteristic. I've heard people describe Camus the Outsider as a very long short story. People talk about Kafka's The Metamorphosis as a short story, but I think that's about, 28,000 words or something like that. But it's long anyway. So it's more to do with approach than word length, I would say.
Mm. What makes a good short story? Because, and I'll qualify that question, because around, where are we thinking now? Turn of the year, roughly. We'd released a couple of novels sort of autumn time last year. And then January released what I think was the best thing we'd released so far, but it was a short story, about 5,000 or 6,000 words.
Yeah.
And we've actually taken it off sale now because we sold about six of them. And
welcome to the world of short story.
Yeah, I know. I guess it's pulled off. It'll either be reworked as a novella, or it'll go into a short story collection or something, or perhaps it's just trash as a short story.
I don't know. I read it and thought it was really good. I mean, I say I read it, I co-wrote it, but when I read it through at the end, I was really like, that's... Because the other ones, I thought, I've enjoyed that, but when I read this one, I was like, we've kicked something off there. We could do lots in this world if you wanted to, or we could leave it as it is. And we were sort of toying with both, weren't we? We kind of thought we could just leave it where it is, and it's spot on.
I was very much in the leave it where it is camp, and just have it as one. But what makes a good short story?
I can tell you from my personal point of view what I tend to go for. And very often when you talk about this, you end up being really negative and saying good short stories don't do this and that. But as someone who reads a lot of submissions, the two things that I really, really like are, stories that surprise. So although stories are very unforgiving in terms of structure, so if you kind of make a misstep. It's very, very obvious in a short story because it's so concentrated. So the wrong scene or the problems with pacing are so much more evident, I think, in a short story just because it's really concentrated. But the worst short stories, you start reading them in the first paragraph, you go, I know exactly what kind of story this is going to be, and then you get to the end and you were right. So short stories do something that you don't expect, and yet that once you get there it seems almost inevitable, but you didn't know it was inevitable. If you see what I mean, that sounds like a contradiction in terms, but the best short stories do it, I think. There's a wonderful short story called Last Night by James Salter, which is available for free on the New Yorker website, which I think is a perfect example of that. You start reading it and it goes in completely unexpected directions, and yet at the end you look back on the story and think, oh my god, it was only ever going towards this point the whole time. And it's such a shocking, brutal story. It's just a tour de force of what you can do with the form.
Because I quite like the idea of getting short stories, because we've been podcasting for a lot longer than we've been writing. We've been podcasting now for about 6 years, and I'm used to having that regular content that's going out to our tribe
here and there. Yeah,
where every week, or I mean, we do a daily podcast now as well, but every week, every day, whatever it might be, we're putting something out there into the world, and we get instant feedback on it, and we've got that constant ongoing connection. And then sometimes we'll do something ridiculous and extravagant and long, like we did a 24-hour podcast, or in a couple of weeks we're doing a live event. And that's kind of like our novel in a podcasting world. Mm. And I like the idea of writing and regularly getting out these little short stories, but still bringing out the big showpiece once or twice a year as well. And I don't know. I've got all these little ideas for short stories, and it's just a different skill set, I think. And I really struggle to turn them into anything that just isn't rubbish. And I think that was the problem with the one we were talking about before, what you were saying about predictability. Although it was quite nicely written, I think it was fairly obvious how it was going to end from the start. You could see where it was going, I think.
I don't know. Yeah.
But there are only 6 people read it, so there weren't enough people to make that decision.
We can stick that on here, can't we, straight away? First book, straight on the site, see where people drop out.
That is a good shout. We'll stick,
usually the analytics.
We'll stick it on MacGuffin. Why didn't I think of that?
That is pretty random.
Because it's just sat there on my hard drive, not being used for anything now, because I've taken it off Amazon.
So all the viewers of this can now go and read it on there.
It will be in the show notes. When this show comes out at the weekend, it will be in the show notes. Assuming we can get it on MacGuffin that quickly, a link to where we're going to have to record it as audio, though, aren't we?
Oh, that's a good point. Do you have to do that every time, or can it be done like a bit after and that sort of thing?
What, upload the audio as well?
Yeah.
Save it in draft. You can't publish it without the audio. Otherwise, you just don't think that people would.
Yeah, no, fair.
That's exactly what we were thinking.
if you're a reader and it's a platform for text and audio, you kind of need to coerce the writers into doing that.
Yeah,
it doesn't kind of confuse.
No, that makes sense. And
upload the text and save it, and then come back to it later. So
it might not be this weekend when this show goes out that it's on there, but I would say within a couple of weeks, I can sit down and read that.
Should we be the characters? We could both do it. I could be one character. We could be the other one.
I just need to read.
I read out lines.
People have started doing that. It's really, really good, and it feels like quite a privilege, you know, to build this thing, and then people start uploading stories and really like going for it and investing their time in it, and you know, adding bits of music sometimes and stuff like that, like much more than I anticipated. I really thought it would be.
We need to get our soundboard of car crash sound effects. And
it'd be great. We could play all the characters.
Shots.
We could just do a line at a time. Pause.
Can we do all the sound effects with our voices?
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't need to describe the car crash. You just heard it. It was brilliant.
There we go. Sorted.
Is there a car crash in it? I feel like
no, I don't think
crash.
There is a car crash in it. I wondered where you were coming from.
We'll put one in so we can do that.
This better be good now. I'm looking forward to it.
We're going to have to edit it, maybe. I enjoyed reading it at the time. No, I'm quite excited, actually, because we have planned a lot of short stories and stuff over time, and I think this is going to be a really good idea for, because when I send stuff like to editors that we've known in the past, I've given us really good feedback, but you don't often know what the reader would think, if you know what I mean. Like, you know what an editor would think, because they see a lot of different stuff, but sometimes readers might have different perspectives, or, you know.
Readers are all different, and some have good taste and some have bad taste. And I think it depends where you, you know, who you're, which readership you're aiming at, you know.
The bad taste ones. the ones we want.
Does it tell you things like, because you told us about the geography, the geographical region they're from, sorry. Will it tell us age, gender?
No, we thought about this kind of stuff, but it's just too intrusive. I mean, we also put it in incognito mode, so you can switch off like sending geographic location and that kind of thing, because I don't want to accidentally build a thing that is just making the world worse.
I just thought it'd be a good way to find out your audience, if that makes sense.
It's also a good way to get Google to come and buy you a few years down the line. Well, hang on, we've already got all your spy stuff built into it. You don't mean to have that in yourself.
I know, but I just don't want to, do no evil. I don't want to contribute to a kind of world. Personal as well. It has to be anonymous to work. You know, if you start being identifiable, I mean, apart from the fact you have legal responsibilities in terms of data protection, like, you don't want someone going on there accidentally reading an erotica story and then accidentally identifying themselves to people I work with.
Well, I only kind of thought that if you said, 35-year-old women from Spain. Do you know what I mean? That's enough information for me to be able to think, right, that's, I have a big following.
Yeah.
It's just the first words coming to my head. But, if you knew you had a massive following of 35-year-old women in Spain, you might move over there because it's quite popular, you know. Just, you get what I mean? You might start writing books more aimed at them, is what I was really thinking.
I can really see the value of it. Like,
we're writing a young adult book, but loads of men in their late 20s read it and no young adults read it, then we'd know we'd kind of failed, but inadvertently found another niche. That's it, yeah.
When we first came up with the idea, we did have a design jam, as it's called, where we invited a bunch of readers and writers in and sort of pitched the general idea and said, how would you use it? And one of the things was we brought people like booksellers in and said, okay, we could do like geolocation stuff. So you'd be able to see who's walking past your bookshop window in the morning and what they're reading. So they might all be into sci-fi or that kind of thing. Thinking, well, that'd be useful because you could change your window display if you saw that loads of people were into that kind of thing. The reaction, probably quite rightly from them, was, I don't want any part of anything that's going to be so. And I kind of think, yeah, fair enough. So we sort of really rolled back on the analytics stuff. It would be useful to know gender breakup, or breakdown rather. I think for sort of a quality reason, because then you might know, well, I'm not reaching enough female readers, or we as a platform might think we're not reaching enough female readers. For example, it's quite useful in that respect. But yeah, I don't know. I don't want to turn into.
That's fine. That makes sense. Yeah. Complete change of direction. Do you write as well?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a dirty secret.
Yeah. Well, we've just outed you on the internet now, I'm afraid.
Everyone knows now.
So it's not a dirty secret anymore. Because we write collaboratively, we have this thing where we'll pick a project, we'll sort of thrash out the ideas together, then one of us will write it and the other one will play it, editing it, and then we sort of keep swapping back and forward. And especially me, I find it really, really, really hard to go into editor mode. And I just wanted to pick your brains about, is it a completely different world? Is it normal for me to be able to do one and not the other? Or,
well, I've only just come back to writing again. Years being an editor, and I actually started doing a part-time PhD, and it's partly creative, so I'm having to write stories, and I don't feel confident at all. And in a way, I think it's worse being an editor, because as soon as you start putting stuff out there, your writers can go, well, he's not very good. <Is he? laughs> And the other thing is, you can't switch off the part of your brain, the editor part of your brain, as you're writing. So it's really hard to get through a first draft without hating yourself and just throw yourself off a cliff.
I don't think that's anything exclusive to editors. I think that's just anyone writing any first draft ever.
Mm. Yeah, I'm sure you're right, but I can't help feeling that it's sort of intensified. Just can't get through a paragraph without going back and redoing it. And I just have to.
That's a really good point, actually, because the amount of we've never released anything that I've not rewritten the first chapter of 10 times. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I can only imagine how much worse that would be if I knew what I was doing. Because that's me rewriting it thinking, I'd quite fancy doing it a little bit differently. This sounds a bit better. But if I had all this proper rules and examples and stuff going around in my head as well, and this is the right way to do it, this is the wrong way to do it, this, if we do this here, it leads to the, I don't know if I could be. I nearly ran him over in my car because I was having to edit something he'd written, and it wasn't awful, I just couldn't stand to edit it.
I
get a complex with you and editing my stuff, because you put it off and you don't do it and you want to kill me, and then I think, well, you're not polite enough to keep it a secret. If you didn't like it, you'd tell me hands down if you thought it was rubbish.
So, oh, I know. It's completely my thing. I don't seem to be able to switch to that brain thing.
It's a bit demotivating, though. Nothing I write is going to see the light of day.
Oh, no, we'll get a...
We'll do it. There's a book sat there.
Yeah, but I can't do it. Is it normal for me to not be able to edit?
No. No, I don't know. I think it's right. The real problem is that Ira Glass talked about it. That thing, whenever anyone's trying to create art, there's always a stage where you know what's good. So you have your favourite authors, and yet you're way below that. And it's the gap between where you are. In a way, it's better to be complete shit and ignorant and just not know what's good. Mm. The trouble is when you know what's good and you can't get there. Mm. And I think that's a phase that all writers go through. I must say, I really envy you having a partnership where you can edit backwards and forwards. I think that kind of collaboration is quite rare, and I wish more writers did it. But I think that often readers have resistance to the idea of collaboration.
Mm. Which we have noticed, and we've actually made the decision as a company that when we release stuff from now on, even though they're written collaboratively, we'll only have one name on the cover, whether that's one of our names or a pen name. But there's been quite a few emails or comments of, two of you writing it, that's a bit weird.
Yeah, as if it's eating or something. You know,
have these people never watched a TV show that's written by a group of eight people? Or a movie.
I think it's a really interesting way to work, and I really like the idea of it. I think often readers have an idea that we kind of valorise this idea of the novelist, you know, working in a garret somewhere and being a genius, and then just sending the manuscripts off to the publishers and they just publish it without touching a single word because it's perfect. But often writing is collaborative to a certain extent in between an editor and a writer, you know, a publishing house. It depends on the writer. You know, we have some of our writers, it actually does kind of work that way because they are very, very polished and they'll send a manuscript and it's like literally not that much. Others take an awful lot of work and backwards and forwards, and you might go through, you know, six or seven or eight drafts and the story will go through so many revisions. And it is collaborative. It's not like you're co-writing it, but it's definitely, it relies on that kind of, I don't know, give and take that you two must have to be able to edit each other's stuff.
A lot of take.
I was going to say, I edit quite substantially, but I haven't ever seen any of my books returned to me.
Hang on, there was Left Behind. That's what killed. I thought I'd be able to do it. I didn't see you walking along the pavement while I was driving along, because you wouldn't have survived.
I turned around your book in a week and a half, and it was good.
What is your block with editing then? What's so...
I don't know. It was, I think it's just my brain is just a little bit broken. And rather than, I don't seem to be able to edit, I seem to want to rewrite the whole thing. And it's really annoying. And I'm constantly stopping myself from doing it. And sometimes I manage to hold myself back. And sometimes I'll give it back to you and it will be completely rewritten. Oh, by the way, here's this new character who's appeared. Mm. And I don't know what it is. And it is something I'm actively working on and trying to pull myself together. The reason I'm not editing the book that you've written lately is because just non-fiction at the moment.
Yeah, no, I know that. We need to send that to someone.
If you were to give me a short story or an outline for a novel, then I'd get on that. And I think I've recovered enough from Left Behind to be able to do fiction properly.
Got to rewrite that at some point, haven't I? Because we've decided that even though we were happy with them when we released them, we now want to completely rewrite all of our old stuff.
Yeah, it might be to edit non-fiction. Because, is this the relationships book?
Yeah.
He knows.
Yeah. Because you can't go in and say, well, I think that's that scene where you have an argument with your wife, for example, or whatever. You can't say, I want to change what's happened. So you've got a constraint on that might actually help.
Yeah.
Well, I might do that might this weekend looking. Then, just to
it
see.
It might be terrible advice. That's the thing that's making me nervous. I think it's good advice. And I think it's different advice from other people's advice. So even if the advice is bad, I'm still going with it because I think it's good.
What's the best bit of advice in it?
Oh, God, I can't think. It's kind of about being really selfish.
What? For or against it?
For being really selfish.
Now you need to elaborate.
Laying down your kind of your rules before you actually meet someone so that you don't meet someone who completely flies in the face of what you want to do because it's your life. And if you find someone who suits your life and they fit you and you fit them, it's sorted. But most people kind of just go, oh, you'll do. And then they end up spending their lives being changed and stuff. And I just don't see the point in that. That's where people go wrong. And a sound advice.
Pretty sensible.
So a checklist or something, a questionnaire at the start?
Well, I do talk about the types of things that people should and shouldn't do. Like, you know, if you hate hanging around with people, like say, for example, you don't particularly like people. If you were marrying, if your partner was a massive family person who constantly wanted you to always go to the family events.
No, she hates people too.
Exactly. But if she loved her family and really wanted to see them all the time and you didn't, you'd be so fed up. And I don't know, if she did loads of sport and expected you to be there every time, you'd be like, oh God. And it's just stuff like that. I hear my mates moaning because they've not been allowed to go to play football or whatever. And I think, well, you should have thought of that before you, you know, got engaged to the person or whatever, you know, that's just insane. I don't have that kind of problem. My wife obviously wishes I'd do more housework, but I keep telling her, ain't going to happen because that's not part of my plan and we'll get a cleaner.
You know? I kind of want to read this now because I think it's going to give me material for future mocking.
It does need more tweaks and stuff. This is only the first run through. It probably needs a bit of beefing up, but yeah, I enjoyed writing it because it was aimed at two of my mates all the way through.
Couldn't we dedicate it to them at the start?
We should.
They really know it's for them.
Yeah, we should. They're getting free copies posted to them because they just need it. It's just frustrating putting up with this. They're in their 30s and they're just ridiculous. So, yeah.
I'm in my 30s and ridiculous.
Yeah, but they're ridiculous.
Okay. Do I get a free book?
No. You're in a relationship already.
I don't want that book. Just, I'm ridiculous and in my 30s. If that's all you need to get a free book.
I'll figure out something that you can sort yourself out with.
Thank you. I'd like a Spider-Man comic or something. That would go down nicely.
Let's go for a self-help book. Like how, I don't know. I'll think of something.
Brilliant. I don't know if we've got any more questions. Have you got any more questions or are we going to wrap things up, little fella?
I can't think of anything. This sounds really cool for the analytics and for the platform of just being able to put little bits out. And I reckon we'll have some fun with that because, as you said, we're podcasters. We put stuff out all the time. Checking out short stories is kind of up our street, isn't it?
So for people who want to get involved in this, Jim, the best thing for them to do is just to head to MacGuffin.io and just register an account, I take it? Or
yeah. So you need to sign up to do it. Have a look on there, find some stuff. I'm hoping that people think, wow, this is an amazing short story. I want to put my stuff on there. And if they think, wow, this is a shit short story, they'll think, I want to put my stuff on there because it'll be better. And then it will be.
You can sign up with Facebook and Twitter, can't you? I remember I did it earlier.
Yeah. Oh, you're already a member, are you?
I think so. If it's the right, if I was on that, I went on two sites earlier, and I'm trying to think
whether you're now in the MacGyver fan club.
Yeah, probably. But you can with Facebook and Twitter, can't you?
Yeah.
I did do that with my Facebook.
I will get on it.
Yeah.
After the show, and I might just stay up all night and record England United as an audiobook. Are you going to stay and do it with me? We're going to act?
We can
have some dog background noise because Dave sounds like he's woken up. That's one of the reasons I'm trying to wrap up.
We did it at the weekend, eh?
Feel like.
How many of the characters use a pirate voice?
None. Which is good because you can't do a pirate voice. Yeah. It's the female characters that we might struggle with. We might need to find a woman.
We could just talk normally.
Talk like this.
Yeah, that might be an issue, but we'll just read those parts. But yeah, obviously we're not going to put out trashy quality, but is there on Audible you have to put out perfectly worded audio books?
No, not at all. And I quite like the fact that on a lot of my favourite recordings, you can like hear a dog barking in the background or some birds on or some kids playing. It feels really intimate. And particularly like going back to audiobooks on a Walkman, I love that kind of thing. Particularly when you're on the move, you're out and about, and it feels really intimate, the experience of having someone read a story to you, like it's you and them, kind of engaging the world, if you like. So I really like those sort of ones. Obviously, if it's really bad audio, people will downrate it. So when you look at a preview of the story, you've got a 5-star rating for text, 5-star rating for audio. If the text is 5 stars and the audio is 1 star, you've kind of been warned off as a reader. Plus, you can look at the analytics to see people dropping out really early. Hmm. So it could be a kind of self-policing thing. But I don't think you need a studio recording to be enjoyable. You just need, as a writer, to think, what would I enjoy? How good would it be? And that's what we want people to do.
Excellent. Yeah. Well, thanks very much for coming on the show, Jim. That's been really interesting, and we're definitely going to have a little play around with that. And I think that's your lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See you next week, boys and girls.